Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, I am joined by guest host Shannon Morse, and we're joined by Gig Ohm's Matthew Ingram. We're going to talk about Facebook privacy, Heartbleed, the new Twitter profiles, and a whole lot more. Coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Shannon Morse. Episode 157, recorded Thursday, April 10th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. I am Sarah Lane from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. And normally I would be joined via Skype by the lovely Amber MacArthur, who is usually in Toronto. Sometimes she's in Florida, and sometimes she's just somewhere else entirely. But today, Amber's traveling, but I've got good news. I am joined by none other than Shannon Morse.
Hi.
Our resident products guru.
Products
now
guru.
Now the host of Before You Buy.
Yes. Yeah, I just started hosting that about 2 weeks ago.
And it's going very well.
I love it. I was super, super excited about starting to host that show.
Well, and you were already the producer.
Yeah.
So it's not as if you're not familiar with gadgets and products.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You like that stuff.
I've gotten a lot of experience in the past year with reviewing products just from the back end, being a producer on it, and doing a weekly review. So it's kind of nothing new for me, but it's a little bit different now hosting it and asking the questions instead of just doing the review. But it's fun. I love it.
Good. Well, I'm glad that you're here to join us on The Social Hour, which you've done in the past.
Yes.
You are gracious enough, even though you're extremely busy, to say, yes, Sarah, I will not leave you hanging on
no,
The Social Hour.
No, I would never leave you hanging.
And you like this stuff anyway.
I do. Yeah. I'm all over the social networks, and I love talking about this kind of stuff. So it's
totally
up my alley.
Excellent. Well, you know who else is all over the social networks and happens to be our guest today is Matthew Ingram, who's a senior writer over at Gig Ohm. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good. Thanks for being here. Nice to have you. How is Canada? We're deciding to represent Canada in some way without Amber here, just so it feels complete.
That's right. You have to have a Canadian, I understand. It's great up here. Snow's all gone. Feels like spring.
Good.
Finally.
Good. Glad to hear that. Yeah, we had a guest a couple weeks ago who was also based in Toronto. I think actually was on a different show, and he said it's barbecue season, and I know that means a great deal people who
sure
have been
does.
You know, snowbound for months and months. Well, let's get into some of the news that Matthew, I know that you are you're keen to talk about. I guess I kind of have to start off with this Heartbleed stuff. The whole issue of privacy and security is something that we couldn't possibly tackle in 15 minutes of talking to you, but it's now gotten to the point where people who are using social networks or casual users, don't really know anything about what encryption means, are now getting emails being told that they need to change their passwords on sites like Facebook and Gmail. And how bad do you think this is?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, the interesting thing to me is that this has been around, this bug, this flaw has been around for 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we just have no way of knowing who, it's not like hackers or people who make use of these bugs and flaws, you know, telegraph that. So it could have been, it could have been kind of basically back doors open for 2 years or more. So we don't really know. And one of the biggest, you know, this is a huge thing in sort of technological terms. So there's literally hundreds of thousands of tiny services or websites or whatever, not just the big ones. They all have to fix their software. They all have to recalibrate. They all have to reissue certificates. They all have to get people to change their passwords. That's going to take a long time. So, you know, you may be comfortable with Facebook or Twitter or Google or Yahoo, but it's all those other ones that maybe you forgot about, or things that are connected to this or that account. I've got 150 different things connected to Twitter. So how long is it going to take them to do all that? And then when should you change your password? You know, if you change your password now before they fix it, you might as well not do it, because then the exploit is still there.
Shannon, I know before the show you were mentioning you've got a ton of stuff to change, although
Oh my gosh.
You take security pretty seriously. You know
I
what
do.
You're doing. So
I use a password manager right now, and one thing that I noticed recently was that I had a whole bunch of websites that were still on the same password from, like, college that I just kind of forgot about. So it was exactly what you were talking about, Matthew, where you completely forget about these sites, and they could be super, super vulnerable, and you have no clue until something like Heartbleed happens. So luckily, I was able to go through and change them all, so now I have all these crazy hashed algorithmic passwords that people can't really guess, but still, the fact remains this Heartbleed has been in effect for a long, long time. So it could,
which password manager do you use?
I use LastPass at the moment, but okay. KeePass is another one that I've checked out and I really like too.
Yeah, I use 1Password, which is great. And I noticed that LastPass will actually tell you which sites are still vulnerable so that you can either wait and change your password, or it's a cool feature. I'm glad they built that in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, one of the sites that apparently I'm going to need to change my password for is Facebook. That's Facebook is one of those sites where, and maybe it's because I feel that I've been burned by Facebook in the past. I always have people trying to impersonate me on Facebook. Facebook just seems to be a cesspool for weirdness. So I take the, you know, my password is weirder there than it is anywhere else. You know, it's not anything like any other of my passwords. But yeah, it turns out that Facebook is possibly part of the issue. Yeah, actually, there's a great article on Mashable right now that we'll link to in our show notes that tells you for sure where do you need to change your passwords, and then also do you need to change your passwords at places that are unclear, Facebook being one of them. If anything is even remotely unclear, and really even if you don't need to change your password, it's probably just time to go through and do a nice clean sweep. Matthew, you wrote an article, I guess it was a few days ago now, last week, about Facebook and the idea that Mark Zuckerberg and his team have kind of had to throw in the towel on you only have one true identity online, and realizing that people don't necessarily want to use the web that way.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating in a way because he was sort of, like I said in the post, he was sort of the poster child for, you know, you have to have one identity and it has to be real and it has to be verified. And Facebook has really been pounding the table on that for a long time. They mandated that you use not a real identity, but one that sounded real, so you couldn't use something that was clearly a pseudonym. And yet it sounds, at least from some of the interviews he's been giving, as though he's moderated that to some extent, and he now feels that maybe it is okay sometimes if you use a pseudonym. It's not clear whether that will ever become possible on the main Facebook, but it sounds like he's at least thinking about it in terms of the sub apps, so Instagram, WhatsApp, for example, and maybe some of the new specialty apps that Facebook is thinking about launching. So I thought that was a pretty big move, because they were sort of, if you see pseudonymity as being valuable, they were always sort of the bad guy because they were trying to force people to use just one identity.
You know, the fact that Facebook is in the process of buying WhatsApp and in fact, the FTC is getting involved and kind of without saying anything, telling both companies, well, you better not change your privacy policies because you can't do that. But I wonder how much of this has to do with Mark Zuckerberg really changing his tune and Mark Zuckerberg saying, gosh, there are all these anonymous or ephemeral or variety of messaging apps, the way that people are socially connecting that are not Facebook, that just go against this idea of being very open mm-hmm. and having all of these photos there forever. I wonder how much this is just, you know, I like to think of him sort of sighing in some conference room and saying, oh, hell with it, fine. You know, somebody can use a pseudonym. You know, I wonder how much he really feels that this is the right idea versus the world changing around him.
Yeah, and it's hard to know, you know, without talking to him. We don't chat that much anymore. He just doesn't return my DMs anymore. But but he, you know, he's a very pragmatic guy and always has been. And so I think it's entirely possible that he has just kind of watched things happen and noticed the rise of these apps, and that there are significant chunks of the population who are perfectly happy and in fact would prefer to do certain things like photo sharing and not have it attached to their sort of quote unquote real identity. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, at some point I think it sounds, at least from what I've read, that there were debates about this within Facebook. And so there were people within Facebook at senior levels who thought it probably wasn't a great thing to keep pounding the table on this real identity. So maybe he's just gradually been convinced. And certainly, he, as a pragmatic individual, he's probably watched the rise of those apps and thought, you know, maybe we should get on the right side of this thing, or at least allow it to happen.
Well, there's actually an article that just came out. I'm looking at the Next Web, although a lot of people have written about it. I'm sure GigOm has as well, that Facebook is trying to clean up its news feed, reducing like-baiting posts, for example, or content that I may have already seen yesterday on my news feed, links that seem spammy or actually are spammy. What do you make of this, Matthew? I've always felt that Facebook is a little bit of a place for the whole family. You know, kids, mm-hmm. kids can use it, but adults who might be a little less tech savvy or maybe getting into social networking a little bit later also have a good time. When I see something like this, I think, well, that's great for me. That makes Facebook more of an experience that I want. But how much do you think that Facebook is really gunning for that kind of breaking news element of Twitter?
Well, I think to some extent they feel like they have to do that. And it's certainly been, my impression is at least, that Zuckerberg and the guy who's in charge of newsfeed design, Chris Cox, I think is his name, they have always talked, or for a long time have talked about the newsfeed as a newspaper, as a sort of, you know, your personalized newspaper. And so the way they see it is that it has to show you things that are useful to you in some way, or that are quote unquote news, however you want to define that. And I think they've been trying to fine-tune it so that you don't see a lot of spammy stuff, so you don't see a lot of ads that aren't relevant, and so you don't see a lot of sort of upworthy or clickbait type of stuff. And the only problem is, what if that's what you actually want to see? What if those things are, you know, maybe not the ads, but what if those things are what you see as valuable? Facebook is effectively trying to do what newspapers used to do, which is to select things and say, well, here's what you need to see. And the only problem is if users don't see that as being what they see as valuable, then they're gonna react negatively to it, and the news feed is actually gonna decrease in value instead of increasing.
There's been a few times in my personal use with Facebook where I've been going through my newsfeed and I'll be like, oh, my brother liked this singer who I obviously know that he doesn't actually like. I'm like, all of a sudden, like, how can I trust this newsfeed on Facebook if I don't believe that my friends and family, who I know very personally, would actually like these things? And it drives me kind of nuts sometimes. I feel like over time with Facebook, especially with Facebook, people are just going to start leaving it if they keep on dealing with these problems with the newsfeed where they're hiding certain things. Like one of my friends is, you know, just gave birth and I had no clue because it wasn't on my newsfeed. Things right. like that I miss, and it just it irritates me so much.
Yeah, there is.
And I think,
go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's the problem with Facebook deciding what to show you. I mean, one of the things that people like about Twitter, I think, is that, you know, you follow people and or things and you see what they tweet. And so to a large extent, Twitter is not screwing around, at least not yet, with showing you specific things and fiddling around with it. And the more Facebook does that, you know, that for every person that increases the utility of it for them, there's going to be other people that decreases the utility and they just stop using it.
Well, all right, we're mentioning Twitter, and I've got to ask, Matthew, how in the world do you have one of the cool new Twitter profiles, at least in the web version of Twitter, which we're looking at right now, which is, you know, everybody says, well, this looks just like Facebook, or it looks more like Facebook than it ever has before. I don't have this new Twitter profile, so obviously it's rolling out to users in waves, but it looks pretty nice. Do you like it?
You know, I do in some ways, and I don't in others. I mean, it's quite, when you think of the old one, this one is a lot larger. Everything's larger. Your avatar photo's larger. All the tweets are larger. And so it kind of, it's not like shouting, but it's a lot sort of more in your face than the old one. I think it's fine. To be honest, I don't go to people's profiles that much. So, and I don't use the web version of Twitter at all. So it doesn't really, I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's fine if it's easier for people who do go there and check people's profiles, but I don't do that a lot. So I think it's not really me they're doing this for. It's for maybe users who aren't that familiar with Twitter to kind of drag them in or convince them that it's valuable in some way.
Or have a Facebook profile and think, you know, maybe yeah. I'm ready to get onto Twitter, and it doesn't really look that different than the format that they're pretty used to. I the cover photo's huge. You've got a nice little, you know, you live on a lake. I know this because I follow you on Instagram. So you've got all these beautiful sunset photos. And yeah, the profile picture's nice. Here's your information. You've got tweets, quite a few tweets there, Matthew, although I know you do a lot of replying to people, so, you know, that has to be factored in. Plus a nice, how many photos and videos are part of all of your correspondence. Following, followers, favorites. That's interesting. Favorites is very front and center. Matthew, what do you use as your Twitter client? I use Tweetbot.
I use TweetDeck. On mobile devices, I use the official client.
Okay, so what do you make of Twitter now allowing not just multiple photo uploads through the official clients, but the tagging of people in photos? I don't feel like I've seen that many people using that feature.
No, I haven't either, to be honest. And I wonder if, you know, maybe people just don't know that it's available yet, or they don't. I've seen marketers use the uploading multiple photos so they can show you four all at once. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, in TweetDeck, in the columns, it basically stacks all those up. So you basically have four photos in a row with nothing, with no information. And it really blows up a TweetDeck column when someone shares four photos all at once. So it doesn't work particularly well on that platform. But I'm assuming it's not aimed at sort of power users or whatever who are using TweetDeck. The tagging, to be honest, the only time I've been tagged is someone at Twitter uploaded something and tagged me. And it was kind of a surprise. I forgot that you were even allowed to do that.
I don't think I've ever been tagged by anyone, and that's probably a good thing.
I have not. Yeah, not that I know of in the last week or so.
What?
Yeah, oh yeah, no, it's a new thing.
I like the new profile. I feel like it kind of reminds me of old school blogs in a way, where you have a nice big header and you have all the links up at the top, and it's very easy to get from page to page. And I also noticed whenever you click on any of the tweets in his timeline, it takes you directly over to the tweet. You don't have to, you know, click on a down arrow and then choose, you know, see this post or whatever the link was.
It's interesting that you say you like it because it has an old school blog look.
Yeah,
because I think for a lot of people,
it
it's like
welcoming.
Those days are behind us. You know, we're all about mobile and apps and
I think
different.
It's pretty. And I do go to people's profiles a lot because, you know, I'm in the social networking era and I'm trying to find people to follow and people to connect with and network with because that's part of my job. So, you know, for me, looking at profiles is something that I do occasionally. Not too often, but, you know.
I think the only time I look at anyone's profile is if they at reply me something weird and I think, who is this Yahoo, you know? And then I go read the bio and I say, oh, forget it.
A lot of times I'll find myself going if, like, it says, oh, your friends Sarah, Matthew Ingram, and P. Delahanty started following, OMG Chat or something like that.
Right.
And I'm like, oh,
right.
Who's this guy? OMG Chat.
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
And
that's cool.
And that discovery definitely works. When it works, it works.
Yeah.
Right?
And I do think that's what they're aiming at. Like, the profile I think they want to make it easy so that if you're looking for new people to add, if you're a new user or you're trying to grow your network, that it's easy for you to go there and get a whole bunch of pleasantly displayed information about that person and figure out, are they valuable? You know, should you follow them?
Mm-hmm. Well, Matthew, I know that you are quite prolific on Twitter. In fact, you're one of the best sources of news, not just your own news, but serving up retweeted news for me. And for that, I thank you. But last question from me, as far as Twitter goes, sure, we've got some design changes. Obviously, Twitter is interested in growing its user base. Maybe it'll never get to Facebook's user base, but that's certainly the idea, being a network that is welcoming for everyone and not just a bunch of syntax for geeks that the real world doesn't understand. Do you think that Twitter is making the right decision with this move? Do they have a choice now that they're public to keep it something that non-technical people enjoy and like as well?
I actually don't think they really have a choice. I mean, I think at some point Twitter could have become something different, and, you know, we could debate for hours whether that would have been a good thing or not. But I think when they raise so much money and then that means you eventually have to go public or be acquired, you go public, you have all these pressures to generate revenue, and to generate growth. And so I think they, you know, it's not enough for Twitter to say, well, hey, we're a cool tool that sort of 3% of people use, and it's really awesome, and, you know, media people like us, and it's great when you tweet the Oscars. Like, it's just not enough. They have to show that they're growing and that they're expanding and that they're reaching new markets, and that's going to require certain things. And we've seen some of those things occur already, and we're going to see some more. Whether people like them or not remains to be seen.
Well, Matthew Ingram, senior writer over at GigOM, thank you so much for joining us on The Social Hour. You have been on the show with Amber and I in the past, but it's been a few years, so thank you for being brave enough to join us again.
Great. Well, thanks for having me.
And let people know where they can follow you online and find more of the stuff that you're writing about and retweeting about all day, every day.
Well, at Matthew I with one T is the best way.
All right. Well, have a great weekend, and thanks again for joining us.
Okay, thanks.
Well, I enjoyed that very much.
Me too. It was nice to meet him finally.
You know, it was funny. Before the show, of course, our chat room is actively chatting, and someone said, so do you guys have a guest every week? And it's, you know, we've never really made some sort of a declaration one way or another. But yeah, I think Amber and I, and you, please do weigh in. I think it's fun to have a good conversation off the top of the show.
I agree. I just have a lot of enjoyment out of meeting new people.
That too.
I just love talking to all these different interesting people because everyone has something to say, and it's really cool to get them on camera and just talk.
I also find that, you know, in many cases, and this is probably a little bit self-serving for The Social Hour, but these are people that I feel like I know pretty well, but I don't, Matthew, and I've never met.
Yeah, I know how it feels.
But he's part of my life every day.
Yeah.
Particularly in the mornings, because he's in Canada, so he gets up earlier. So I wake up and it's like Twitter. Matthew's been very busy, but no, he's great. If you don't follow Matthew on Twitter, that's Matthew with one T. You really should, because he is all over the news and has a lot of opinions too, and he's not afraid to share them. Quick reminder: if you're not watching us live, we do record the show at noon Pacific time on Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Of course, we are on demand. You can watch us any way you like. Just go to twit.tv/TSH. That is where all of our shows live in perpetuity. All of our episodes are there. Quickly grab the video. Subscribe to the show if you'd rather have the video delivered to you each week. Try to make it as easy as possible for you to follow along. And of course, all the links to guests, websites that we mention, news articles that we're talking about, apps that we cover, those are all there as well. All right, before we get into some of the news of the week, we want to thank Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Audible is, well, it's really the only place that we can possibly recommend for audiobooks, because there are over 150,000 downloadable titles on Audible. And these aren't just fiction. It's all types of literature. There is fiction, but there's nonfiction. There's autobiographical stuff. There's even periodicals.
Sci-fi and fantasy.
Is there anything that you've listened to on Audible, Shannon, that you want to suggest?
Let's see. I'm really big into the vampire books.
You are. This
yes.
I know. This
like
I know about you.
Oh, what are they called? The Vampire Academy ones?
Okay.
I think that's
which
what
is. I guess that would be considered
Rochelle Mead.
Young lit.
It is. It's young literature, and there's a little bit of a love story and lots of fighting and
love,
stuff.
Love
Very
that.
Fun. Yeah, that's it.
And it's a series, right?
Yes, it's a whole series. I believe there's like more than 5 books now.
It's like Sweet Valley High, but with vampires.
And they're making a movie about it too.
Are they?
Yeah.
Not surprised. So yeah, if you want to get into Vampire Academy, but you're like me and you think, I'd really like to have a few more hours of my day to just sit around and read. I never feel like I have that. Or, you know, when I'm at home at night and I'm ready to, you know, get out my iPad or something and read, I just can't keep my eyes open. Audible's great, though, for listening to content while you're doing stuff throughout the day. Maybe you commute a lot. You know, you're sitting on a train, or you're like me, you're in your car, or you're exercising, or you can play it at home, maybe even with your headphones, or even, you know, attach it to your speakers. That's actually something that I do sometimes when I'm cooking and I know I'm going to kind of be stuck in the kitchen for a while. Listen to a book on Audible. And actually, if you haven't tried Audible before, for listeners and viewers of The Social Hour, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to just try out the service. And I think that that's really important. Take advantage of this because it can be a little weird, the idea of, well, am I listening to a book? Is that really the same as reading? And I think once you do, you'll agree, yeah, it really is. And it kind of lets your imagination go nuts in a fun way that reading doesn't. One audiobook could be, you could try the episode one of Vampire Academy, or anything you like. To download a free audiobook of your choice, we'll suggest audiobooks, but it's all up to you. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour and choose one. And at the end of your trial, you get to keep it. It is a free book. Like taking a free book from the library and then you never actually have a librarian get mad at you. audiblepodcast.com/socialhour, and thanks so much to Audible for sponsoring our episode. In fact, it's episode 157 for anybody who's keeping score. So we were talking about Twitter with Matthew Ingram just a couple minutes ago, and a great story from the Washington Post that Amber actually found and sent it over to me, that Twitter is good at predicting unemployment. And what's interesting about this is there was a research team over at the University of Michigan and Stanford. Okay. All right. Cool.
Those guys.
All right. So these guys have put together, hey, let's try to figure out if you can find out about trends, real trends that matter, you know, national wealth as unemployment. And what they did was they decided to not only have keywords that they were following, such as lost my job, hashtag unemployed, that sort of thing, but they really started to get granular with slang. Axed, canned, pink slip. Well, pink slip is not really a slang, but they tried to make it so, okay, well, let's think about keywords, but also kind of sentiment of, you know, if you lost your job and maybe you went and got some happy hour drinks with somebody who was picking up the tab, maybe you're a little upset, maybe you're misspelling some things. So there was all sorts of stuff that went into the research, and it turns out that if you compare it against actual official employment reports, which are published, certainly in the U.S., is it monthly or quarterly? I feel like I'm listening to them all the time, that they do start to see rises in tweets that reference being unemployed as the unemployment rate goes up and vice versa.
Yeah.
Which is just goes to show you, it's not as if Twitter is predicting anything really, but it's a really good indicator that people do want to talk about what's going on.
Oh, for sure. I completely understand this. I believe that there, a few years ago maybe it was, there was a website that searched through public Twitter posts and found everything that they could find about drugs, like marijuana.
Uh-huh.
So you could see like all these people tweeting about how much drug use that they've been doing. So it's not surprising to me that somebody is able to put together a post like this and say, hey, here is the research I've been doing. Here is, you know, how many people have been losing their jobs and been posting about it on Twitter. Because people are very, very outspoken on Twitter. You know, they talk about all sorts of personal things.
Right.
So it's surprising.
There was something that we covered a little while back that was also a, can Twitter predict the flu?
Oh.
And, you know, the word predict can be a little misleading because it's more of just, it's mirroring what's going on.
Not necessarily a prediction of the future.
Right. But it's sort of like, hey, you know, people in the greater Washington, D.C. area, there seem to be a lot of tweets about the flu.
Oh.
Maybe, you know, maybe the next metropolitan area better watch out because, you know, flus spread seasonally. And we sort of went, ah, that's really interesting because, again, people just talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
And when it comes to something like job loss or job gain, that's the sort of thing that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. It's one of those life-changing things that people do want to share. They want to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's to gain sympathy or whether it's just to, you know, praise their excitement and be like, yeah, I did this. So it's not surprising to me that they were able to figure this stuff out. It's really cool.
It is very cool. So Twitter, not that bad at predicting unemployment. So hopefully the number of unemployed tweets is going down, which means that more of us are all staying employed. And that's a good thing.
That's good.
All right. So let's talk about Facebook again for a second. This is an interesting story. Came out yesterday. Facebook is soon going to force any user that enjoys the Facebook chat functionality to use Facebook Messenger, which is a standalone app that has been around for a while, but has always been a separate app from the main Facebook app that you could use if you just wanted to chat with people without having the entire Facebook experience, but could be seen as a little bit odd, because if you want to check your news feed, maybe look at your events list, and then respond to a couple of Facebook chats, you can do that all on the Facebook app. Of course, you can do that at Facebook.com as well. Facebook Messenger is its own thing. And it's sort of like, well, okay, you can use it as a communication tool, but then you have to go back to Facebook for everything else. What do you make of this, Shannon? Do you care? On iOS, I happen to really like the Facebook Messenger app. I think it's very well done, but, you know, I'm sort of a sucker for a good design. So this doesn't bother me, but I think it's going to make a lot of people mad.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
I don't like this. I don't like it at all. I like having all of my Facebook stuff in one app with one notifier that shows up on my little notifications tab, and that's it. I don't want them cluttering up my home screen with more separate apps, because right now we have the Facebook app.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have this Messenger app. What's next? A newsfeed app? Like,
it's possible.
I just want everything in one place. That's it. Just leave me alone, Facebook. If you give me too many apps, I'm going to be busy sitting around on Facebook all day.
Well, I think, you know, I guess before Facebook decided that they wanted to buy WhatsApp, I would have said, well, this is them doubling down on, we've got the Messenger service that we want everyone to use. And here's, we're going to make it a standalone app. So even if you hate everything else about Facebook, you might end up using this app, and then we still win.
But you still have to have an account.
That's true. That's absolutely true. But now that they bought WhatsApp, which has, well, I think it's 450 million mm-hmm. users or something, pretty crazy, exponential growth. Some predict that WhatsApp will be bigger than Facebook at some point, as people just want to chat with their friends and not necessarily have the whole social network experience.
So this is the new AOL Instant Messenger?
Kind of. But what, you know, what happens to WhatsApp? Facebook Messenger Facebook is saying, you need Facebook Messenger if you want to use our service. If they buy WhatsApp, does WhatsApp stay another competing service? It doesn't make a lot of sense.
I assume they would merge it.
I would assume it would all become Facebook Messenger sooner than later. But, and I guess, again, I sort of like Facebook Messenger, but I think I'm in the minority. I know a lot of people who say, never used it. I would never use it.
I use it a lot because, you know, with wedding planning, it's really, really easy to just email people real quick and say, hey, has your address changed before I send out RSVPs or whatever. So that's really nice about it. It's very easy to just ping somebody real quick, especially if I don't have their phone number. It's great. But I think I understand why Facebook is doing it. Because they, you know, they feel like it's just kind of bogged down and it's kind of hidden in the Facebook app. So they want to, you know, make it speed it up a little bit and make it easier for people to use. So I don't know. Maybe they're trying to get more people to use it by separating it out.
Yeah, I think that's probably the strategy. But for anybody who, and if you're somebody who's saying, well, that's crazy, but I refuse. You actually could just visit Facebook.com on your mobile device. You can use Facebook that way, and Messenger would be built in. Facebook, of course, on the web, this isn't going to change. It's not as if they won't let you use the chat functionality on the web. This is just really mobile-based. But it is interesting that Facebook makes, you know, the bulk of its advertising revenue via mobile. It took them a while, but it's been very successful for the company. And they still feel, okay, well, this needs to be broken out into its own thing. Will they monetize Facebook Messenger as a standalone app? They certainly don't now. I don't know the answer. I've never really understood how that would work if
maybe
it's just conversations between people. Maybe a company sends you
messages. Try our new Coca-Cola brand.
Which is already happening to me on Snapchat, by the way.
Oh.
There have been a couple times where someone, because it's a funny username, wants to be my friend, and I think, oh, maybe that's somebody I know, and I just didn't realize because they've got a funny username. Mm-hmm. and then I look at a 5-second ad and I'm so angry.
Oh, I hate that.
Oh, not going to do that anymore. If I don't know you, if you didn't Facebook message me that you want to add me on Snapchat and I know you, I will never click on your stupid 5-second ephemeral message again. Speaking of new apps, this was a big story from Dropbox yesterday. They had a press conference in San Francisco, announced a bunch of new stuff. One of those is an app called Carousel, which is, it sounds like right now, what it does is attempts to manage the photos that are on your device. That's, you know, for me, it's my iPhone. And your photos on Dropbox, and wants to sort of be an intelligent place to store everything. I think that I just actually went through this at the Apple store yesterday, Shannon, because I smashed my iPhone screen and I needed a new iPhone, and I was having iCloud backup problems, and they were saying, well, you know, how many videos do you have in your phone? Maybe you need to delete some of those. How much of that stuff do you really need? And it's like, all of it.
Yeah.
I don't, yeah, that's a stupid question. That's why I have, these are my memories.
Yeah.
So they need to be, there has to be some better way to make sure that I can keep them all. So it sounds like that's what Dropbox wants to do. Do you use Dropbox? Do you like the idea of Dropbox being a place to manage photos, even on other networks, which it sounds like they're also keen on doing?
It sounds interesting, but currently I don't think that I have a use for it. I do use Dropbox currently, and I just use it to share files with my coworkers and things like that because it's easy. When it comes to photos, though, I usually just use the Google Plus automatic upload off of my Nexus 5. It's pretty much the same thing. It automatically backs them up as soon as I take a photo, and sometimes it makes them really cool with an auto awesome video or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all I need. So I don't know if I'll use this. I'll check it out for sure, but I don't think it's going to change my life or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I like Dropbox the company. I think that in general it's a wonderful tool. Dropbox has made great strides to be just not a storage place. You know, Dropbox, when I first decided to start backing things up to Dropbox, it was not a visual.
It was janky, and it was years ago.
Yeah, it was certainly not visual. You got some folders. It worked.
Yeah, it was so bad.
But it wasn't...
not even secure.
Right. It just wasn't necessarily, like, fun to use. And the company, obviously, they bought Mailbox, which is a very popular email app. They've announced an enterprise version of Dropbox, or there's Dropbox Business, which would, if you use Dropbox for work and feel like, oh, I've got this personal and then I've got a business, it'll be a place to merge the two within one Dropbox account, which is obviously very convenient for folks. But the whole photos situation, I think I'll be interested to see if Dropbox can figure this out, because I haven't really started using Carousel because I've heard some weird things about how Dropbox will, it's not actually syncing to your local photos. It's basically copying them, and so it creates storage problems.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's actually my problem already. So I don't need my Dropbox folder, which is always full anyway, to then be really full of photos that I don't necessarily need on Dropbox. So I kind of have to test the waters. But I think that the idea that you might post a photo to Path or mm-hmm. Facebook, or it's locally on your phone, or some of it is, you know, backed up with your Google services. Mm-hmm. There still seems to be like a peppering of photos all over the internet,
yeah.
At least for me.
Yeah.
So if we figure out, okay, well, if it's Dropbox or somewhere else, Dropbox's Carousel, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that exists yet.
I don't think it does.
Well, it should. All right, so should we talk about something pretty cool, which is the first Instagram post from the International Space Station?
Yeah, so this is totally awesome. I've been really getting into everything about the International Space Station recently.
Have you? And
yes.
What turned you on to the International Space Station all of a sudden?
we did an interview with a guy named Liam Kennedy on Coding 101, and
oh, cool.
It was about this little Raspberry Pi that will blink a bunch of LEDs whenever the ISS goes above you. So it's really cool. If you're like in the middle of the night, you can run outside, and sometimes you get lucky and you can see the ISS going over you. It's so awesome. So it really got me interested in you know, learning more about the International Space Station, why they're up there, what kind of research they're doing. And so I find this very, very funny. And I'm like, it's about time they took a selfie and posted it on Instagram.
American astronaut Stephen R. Swanson posted this from the Kapoa Observational Module in the International Space Station. Of course, he's up there. And it's kind of fun. I mean, this is actually, if you think about this photo, it's totally crazy. Now, this was not on Instagram. It was on Twitter.
Wow.
It wasn't before Instagram existed, because that was July of 2013. But it's a photo of a droplet of water in front of this astronaut, Karen Nyberg. Okay, and at first, when you look at it, you think, what sort of weird photo filter software was this? But no, it's actually... I don't know how long it took her to get that photo, but it is pretty amazing. But I think it's, you know, it's not so much about a selfie on Instagram. It's the fact that we now are in communication, getting communication from people in space.
It's amazing.
You know, and before
they're
it was
in
sort
outer
of,
space. They're miles above us.
Many, many miles.
It's incredible.
Yeah, really. The more the merrier. I am into it. I'm more selfies from space, please.
I agree.
Especially because
I'm living vicariously through these guys.
Well, see, and that's as far as I choose to go. I know it's an unpopular way to feel, but I don't want to ever go into space.
Yeah.
Space scares me. But I like to see I'm very moved by the sort of experience and the visuals and the good work that people actually do in space. So thank goodness we have these selfie tools so that I see more more about that. I don't know what my problem is, Shannon.
It's okay.
I don't want to go into space.
I don't want to go deep diving.
I don't really want to do that either. I guess it has to do with breathing. I've got issues with... If it's hard to breathe... Gravity...
I just don't like deep sea monsters. I'm okay going up there.
Yeah.
I can deal with outer space monsters and Cylons. I'm totally cool with that.
But sure.
Sting me underwater? Nope.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. And it's dark.
It is dark.
And cold.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's dark and cold in space, too. Well, we've got a lot to figure out yet before this planet self-destructs. But, okay, so let's move on to our gig of the week. This is kind of fun thing that, again, Amber decided, you know, we're talking about social all week. We, you know, spend an hour talking about social, and a lot of people like the show and ask us repeatedly, well, how do I get involved in, you know, some sort of a job that would pay me to be a social? If you look on LinkedIn, there are a variety of digital marketing manager jobs, and that might not be the first thing that you search for if you're looking for something in social. You might be thinking, communications expert or whatever. Digital marketing can be, and Amber's actually more well versed in the marketing world than I am, but quite a few jobs that end up, you know, this is marketing, but they end up having a lot of social components. These are jobs all over the world. I mean, we've got Hong Kong, Toronto.
There's Ubisoft in here?
Exactly. Accenture, Catalyst. These are big companies. Burton Snowboards. I would love to be a digital marketing manager for a snowboard company.
Oh, that would
That'd be
awesome.
So fun. I could talk like a, you know, snowboarder, whatever that means. But definitely take a look. We'll put this in our show notes, of course. Of course, if you're on LinkedIn, you can just search for digital marketing manager, and just take a look at all of the different opportunities that may be out there and maybe appeal to you. It's not all the same job, but it's certainly a category that there are a lot of opportunities in. So, good luck. All right, so we've got a video of the week. This is kind of interesting. There's a anti-bullying video that came out of Singapore, and the idea about this is that it's actually really sad, but it's a cartoon that is illustrating the fact that, you know, bullying is not only wrong, but, you know, is very detrimental. It hurts, and people are affected by it, and in some cases end up, you know, terrible results, not just unhappiness, but you've got, you know, kids committing suicide. This is a big problem. And the idea behind the video is that the more you share the video... via social, When you first launch the video, there's a big button to share it on Facebook. The shorter the video gets, as in, it's as if you are eradicating bullying online. So it's a little bit of a little bit of a gimmick, but it's almost as if the more it gets shared, you're helping to end this trend that I know it's certainly for young people is serious business, but it happens at all ages.
Aww.
I know.
It makes me sad.
It makes me sad too, and I understand bullying, and I know that, particularly...
I know, bunch of jerks.
Yeah. I don't understand it as in I am making excuses for it, but I understand that it happens particularly, with the younger set, but adults bully each other too. And, online it can get really ugly, and I am so glad that when I was in high school... there weren't the tools that there are now for people
so
to make,
lucky.
Like a I Hate Sarah Lane fan page or something, because I just can't imagine how hurtful that would have been. And that's something that kids have to deal with so much more now. I mean, there's just so much coming at them and so many ways to be anonymous, and people don't always behave.
Oh, that's so true. I have two younger siblings, and one of them has dealt with a lot of bullying online because she has a lot of dramatic friends, and there's whole nother tangent there, but basic matter of this is she's called me several times crying because she didn't know how to deal with it, and I've had to talk to her, and I've had to just be like, look, be strong, like their opinion doesn't matter, what opinions matter are your own, and things like that. So yeah, bullying's a serious issue, and there's a lot of kids out there who have gone into a major depression or even committed suicide because of it, and I feel really, really strongly about it. So I think anything that is going to help stop bullying, or help more people understand that it's not a good thing to bully people online, no matter what your age is, then yeah, I say go for it.
Yeah, I totally 100% agree with you. I wonder how effective this sort of thing is. I think it's easy for us to say, oh, that's great, what a nice thing, you put together a video, and it's about awareness, and I don't know how much the people who are doing the bullying get out of this.
They'll probably just look at it and laugh.
Something like that, yeah, because kids can be so brutal, and so can adults, actually. But but I think that this is, certainly getting through to the people who are behaving inappropriately, even though it's difficult, should never be stopped. Mm-hmm. It is about awareness, and the more people who understand that, oh, this is actually happening, this is a thing that's happening and is extremely hurtful in many cases, the better. So good on you, Singapore.
Even if it just makes a little bit of sentiment happen in some bully's head that where they go, oh, well, maybe this is wrong, but I'm still going to bully for a little while, and then eventually they stop. I mean, that would be nice.
Exactly. I mean, it's cruelty. Mm-hmm. It's cruelty,
it is.
And the more awareness that you have that is unacceptable, the better. Absolutely. By the way, if you want to share this video or just watch it, shareittoendit.com is the URL, and we'll have that in our show notes as well. All right. Reminder, we love hearing from you. We're kind of getting to the end of our hour here, so we're gonna breeze through the show, not without our rad or fad. But for next week, email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can call us and leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. Or you can record a video, send us something that you read online that you'd like us to cover. Tweet at us. Of course, I'm at Sarah Lane. Shannon Morse is Snubs. And of course, Amber Mack is Amber Mack on Twitter as well. Twitter seems to be the best place for all of you to get a hold of us, but we're on all the social networks, so please feel free. All right, without further ado, rounding up our show is our Rad or Fad segment. And I think this actually it works really well with our last discussion. This is teens. And teens behaving well, and who better to teach them than maybe their schools? Now, I'm a little tongue in cheek here because I'm not exactly sure that teachers and parents are always that adept at social media, but there is there's something happening. There's actually a privacy curriculum developed at a law school, Fordham Law School in New York, where kids are learning the value of online privacy at a young age. So this is not sort of like, little Jamie ended up talking to somebody online that may not be who they say they are, and mom and dad have to sit down and have a talk with Jamie. This is part of the training that you get as a student, how to be in life, you know, multiplication, privacy mm-hmm. training, because this stuff isn't going away, and maybe parents are clueless enough that they're not talking to their kids about this, so it should actually be part of a curriculum.
Oh yeah, there's a whole generation gap there between parents yeah. and little kids, or well, teenagers now, I guess, teenagers and even younger 20-somethings that are, you know, they don't fully understand privacy, so they feel like they can share everything and anything that they want. And when I try to explain this to my younger siblings, again, sometimes it gets back with laughter. Sometimes they're just like, oh, whatever, Shannon, you don't know anything. And I'm just like,
trust me, I do.
Trust me on this. So I try to explain it to them, but I think it's kind of nice that they're kind of giving them handbooks on this type of thing. I don't know how much usefulness they're going to get out of it, or if they'll even pay attention and, you know, read the handbook or listening to the teachers and instructors talking about this kind of thing, but I hope they do.
This same article over at Boston.com mentions the St. Michael School in a suburb of St. Louis, that middle school students were learning how to manage their digital reputations. I guess a law student instructor from Washington University that was nearby came in and talked about facial recognition software, not only used by Facebook, but also at a local mall. So this is something that you need to realize is happening. It's not social networking, but it's something that can be used, not necessarily against you, but used in some form online based on where have you actually been, who you've been talking to, what does it mean when you send a text that you instantly regret? Well, somebody's got it.
Yep.
You know, if you delete it, it doesn't really matter. The message has already been sent and now can proliferate all over the place. So, I don't know. I think it's, not having been in any of these training sessions and knowing that sometimes there are varying degrees of wits that people have about them as far as privacy goes, I would say I think this is rad. I think it's probably, you know, the online privacy is not some sort of a fad that's going to go away. It's something that we have to pay more and more attention to. And, you know, certainly with something like Heartbleed, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, privacy and security are not always, you know, the same conversation, but not having...
A lot of times they are.
Yeah, not having enough security certainly affects your privacy.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I think it's again, more awareness is probably better for the kids.
Keep going at it, kids.
Yeah. Well, Shannon, this has been a wonderful hour. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I had a great time.
I'm so glad. I did too. Please, but next time Amber is unavailable, I'm going to ask you again.
Sure.
And I
Anytime.
Hope that you're available again. Yay! Thanks to all of you for joining us as well. Reminder, we are live on Thursdays, noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to get that eventually. I'm going to get that. I'm still committing it to memory. New time. But of course, if you can't watch us live, we do hope that you watch or listen at your leisure. In fact, I'd love to know, would you like, you know, listening to us on the commute or on your big TV at home? It would just kind of be fun to take a little poll and see how everybody absorbs the show. But until next week, we will keep at the social networks and be back with another show next Thursday, as always. Until then, have a great week.
Bye.